Welcome to the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. I'm your host, Jesse Gitzman-Burke, and with me tonight is Layla Miranova.
Hello.
Oh, am I saying something now? Oh, hi.
David Schwartz.
Hello.
Nathan Denny.
Hello.
And our game master from Horror at Heugeldahl, Chris Wagner.
Hello.
So we're going to do a post-wrap-up of the Horror at Heugeldahl adventure, which we just finished. We're going to kind of expose some of the underlying content of the adventure, talk with Chris about what we missed, what was how our adventure went compared to how it was written. Really just kind of do a post-mortem on it. This is going to be a spoiler-heavy podcast, so if you haven't played Horror Heugeldahl or plan to, you probably want to skip this episode. But with that, let's... Chris, since you actually played the... or GM'd the session, can you give us a quick synopsis from your point of view of what the adventure is about and kind of how it... The basic setup for what was supposed to happen.
Okay, so the adventure is really set up in sort of three acts. The first is the arrival and sort of being bushwhacked on the road to sort of let folks know that the Shalians have been kicked out of town. So that sets that was, the stage.
When we were on the carriage coming in and we got ambushed when trying to help out the other carriage.
Right.
That was that scenario?
Right. So that's really like laying the groundwork. And just to sort of preface before I go any further, the adventure as written looks like it was supposed to be collapsed into a much shorter time frame, and I didn't think that it did it justice and didn't give the characters enough room to really kind of breathe in the adventure, so I purposefully extended it out. The way that it's written was supposed to be arrive in town, sort of investigate a whole bunch of things in town, go to sleep at night, and the cavalcade shows up the next day. And I just thought that was really abrupt. And not only that, but also really dangerous because there was a lot of potential harm being done. We don't have a really combat-heavy party, so looking at all that, I thought, you know, hey, I want to give this a little bit more room. So I made the decision to stretch it out.
So how many nights did we end up spending?
Three.
So we arrived, spent two nights, had the climax, and then finished off that evening?
Yes.
Okay. So you added a full 2 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
I really did. And having done that and looked back on it, I think that it went really well with this group. I think that the timing ended up working out much better. I think it just would have been too aggressive, and there would have been a lot more missed if we had tried to hustle through it at the time frame that it was written for.
I think my thoughts on that, I think I agree that the as written may have been too brief. You wouldn't have enough time to really explore the town. But I felt the two full days may have been too much because I felt our second full day we filled like the first quarter of it and then we were like, well, I don't have anything more to do today. What are we going to do? I think in retrospect, I think one full day would have been right on the money.
Probably, yeah.
Because I think we had enough clues to do something with it, but we didn't really know what was going to happen.
That could definitely have played out if I had accelerated the ambush, but we had sort of left without you guys having an opportunity to get up to the Acropolis, and I thought that was pretty important that we fit that in.
So the Acropolis, I didn't get it. What did we... I mean, I get that he was the only god, aside from Mor, that really survived, but I didn't understand the relevance of it, really.
Well, let me back up, too. So let me finish. The other two parts of the adventure were essentially getting into town and sort of dealing with the conspirators, mm-hmm. right? So that was sort of the second act altogether. So there was the brother of the twin brother of the one that led the road
ambush. He was a twin.
He was a twin.
Excellent.
So he, you know, had his point in getting revenge on you guys, and he was linked in with the innkeeper and the doctor, and they were all kind of cronies together. So that little group of thugs were essentially all in cahoots. Whether they were all in on the main plot or not, it wasn't necessarily clear to you guys, but you know, some of them were, some of them weren't. Most of them were just like highwaymen that were for hire kind of thing. So you just kind of had this collusion of bad guys all working together against you. So that was supposed to occur. And then the next day, the cavalcade arrives in the morning, according to the adventure. It's supposed to actually pull up in the morning, but I kind of wanted to do a little bit of a something wicked this way comes and have the train arrive at night kind of thing. So it just kind of worked out that you guys went out and explored that in the evening. So that's, I just ran with that. But I wanted them to have sort of arrived under cover of night and started setting up and everything like that. So the final act, though, as written, is sort of a fork. It can either be the players march up to the cavalcade and confront them and turns it into a big bloodbath, or it starts to play out. Like maybe you guys hadn't quite figured everything out yet, then it was on a timeline where I had a timeline to keep track of, and regardless of whether you participated or took action or not, certain events were going to be occurring at certain points in the day. So we didn't get to do any of that. That never came up, and that could have been potentially interesting. And a lot of the characters and things that were at the cavalcade would have played out much differently than just combatants. But as it was, it just turned into a big
fight. Would that have added another session by doing that?
I think it could have just been done the same session. It just would have played out differently. Instead of having a big fight, we would have had something more like maybe picking them off in small groups, or if you guys hadn't maybe put all the pieces together or confronted the doctor, then maybe certain things would have started to occur that all would have sort of started to accumulate and boil over until eventually they do their performance, and when they do the performance, it's when, you know, things kind of come to a head.
So do you guys have any more questions before I kind of start picking out particular sections I had?
No, I think that's good.
Okay. So
So I think what I'd like to do is kind of work our way through the adventure and talk about where we may be derailed from the adventure and you were forced to ad hoc some content, or and then if appropriate, you can also mention stuff of interest that we may have missed.
Sure.
Or clarify some things, because I still have some questions on why everything happened the way it did. I kind of have my own thoughts of why it worked out, but just from a game mechanics perspective, I'd be curious.
Okay, you know, and what else was there? I'm happy to sort of just narrate it, and if you have questions, pipe in, and we'll talk it through. So,
like, what was the first thing we did when we got to town?
The ambush.
The ambush was
a point where you missed something.
Okay.
And, yeah, what was the ambush for?
Well, the ambush was supposed to happen, and again, it was to introduce you to the Shalian. They were in need, so yeah, they put them in a position where, you know, most people are going to say, hey, let's stop and help out the priests that are getting, you know, kicked by the big bad guys, right? Mm-hmm. So it puts you in a situation to go help. So you did that and talked to them a little bit, and the gypsy family that was heading out with them in the wagon kind of started to do a little bit of foreshadowing of what might be going on in the town. What you didn't get was when the three bad guys retreated up over the hill, I think there was sort of an expectation by the adventure writer that you would go off after them, or at least to go find out, hey, are they just at the top of the hill or something like that. So you missed the bandit camp. And so there was a camp up there that they had, and the twin brother had actually been present at the ambush and retreated as soon as he saw things were going badly. So he had run back to the camp and was getting on his horse and fleeing back to town, and if that transpired, then he would confront you in the bar later. And it also made the whole ambush in the inn much more difficult, because everybody that you didn't kill at the encounter here would then reappear later on. So by not pursuing them back to the camp, you didn't get a chance to sort of make that other encounter easier. So now in the middle of the night, you got bushwhacked by even more bad guys.
So what you're saying is the two major combat encounters of this adventure, we took on the largest chunk we could.
Exactly. So
for a non-combat party, I think we did rather well.
Economics,
so,
right?
So a couple of other things that you missed. So at the camp, there was actually a caltrop trap that you could have stepped in and caught a disease. Hmm. And then the most important sort of link to everything else that might have helped, you know, bring things into focus a little faster was that they had several goblin corpses all wrapped up in blankets to leave on the road to make it look like goblins had ambushed the Shalians.
Oh, okay.
So when you found the goblin in the doctor's office,
okay, I had a big question about that.
There was a connection there, and then you also, I'm jumping way ahead, but there was also a bounty hunter in town that you guys never found, just never encountered, and he was selling goblin ears, things like that. So there was a way to sort of connect it all together to sort of say, well, hey, I just, you know, I killed a bunch of goblins and, you know, took these ears and sold them to some guys out on the road. You know, he didn't know what they did with them, but So that was where that all sort of played in together. So you just had sort of had a red herring now because you didn't find the other pieces. So the goblin was like, what's all that about?
Certainly put an air of suspicion on the doctor, but you couldn't figure out what it was.
And again, I think if you'd figured out, hey, this guy's selling ears, where are the bodies? Well, I sold them to these guys out on the road. And, you know, maybe it all starts to come together a little bit that, you know, something else was going on, especially now that you find one in the doctor's office. Mm-hmm. So
I just thought he was being creepy.
Yeah, it worked out for that too. So that was sort of the main miss there. But otherwise, you did what you were supposed to do, which is to talk to the Shalians. And everything that I kind of played out there was as written, where they didn't really feel that Agnetha was bad per se. They just thought that there was a confluence of bad stuff going on. That's why they didn't want to just turn her in immediately. So they said, hey, if you're going, maybe you could talk some sense into her, and we'll give you a few days to sort it out. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, we're going to tell somebody, you know, and they'll probably string her up kind of thing. So
I think we went to Agnetha. That was our next kind of like major...
Well, you went directly to the inn and ended up having your meal and everything in the inn, and then confronting the...
That's right. You sat down and got funky with the twin.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Trying to pick a fight.
That was a fun scene.
In that scene, that also played out mostly as intended. The dwarves were there to sort of set the tone for, hey, there's a bunch of missing dwarves that went off on this crusade, essentially leaving the town more defenseless. That was, I think, part of that was they were trying to establish that the town was really being sort of stripped of all of its defenses, and if you didn't do something, no one was going to. Mm-hmm. So they were trying to get that set up right away. So... that scenario, though, I played it out a little ad hoc because I wanted to set the scene and let you see that there was this guy in the inn. And again, the way that the adventure was written would be that same night, they were all going to bushwhack you. And I just didn't think that gave that enough room to breathe. So I decided, okay, let's have this confrontation. Let me present this guy as sort of a dangerous cat, but not dumb. And he also knew right away that you'd already killed his brother. So he was aware of that at the time that you confronted him, and he was trying to play it cool, like, I'm going to get you, but I'm not going to do it now. You know, that was what I was trying to do with that. Interesting. So... you guys had the confrontation that was, again, largely ad hoc. There was no set dialogue or anything for me to do with this guy. I just had stats and a description, so I ran with that. You spent the night. The innkeeper was supposed to play it kind of cool and, you know, sort of try and diffuse things because he's in on it with... he's essentially, like, setting up the highway bandits, you know, with people to go pick off. So they were in cahoots. It's mainly just thugs. But the innkeeper...
like, what's in it for him, though? Why is he...
He's getting a cut.
Oh.
So he's getting a cut of the stuff. And then he's also sort of a racist against the Strigani. So, you know, none of you were obviously playing Strigani, but anything like that. Like, he was essentially selling plague blankets to them. And also, if they came to his inn to be put up, you guys didn't stay in the common room, so you didn't have to get confronted with this. But he had the common room, all the blankets were plagued.
Oh, my God.
And so if you slept in them, you'd get disease,
things like that.
But he was only putting the Strigani in there. He wasn't trying to plague up the whole town, but he wasn't helping.
What was up with the dude at the well who we intimidated?
He was also part of the agitator was also part of the little band of thugs, which is why he was at the ambush in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also a racist, so against the Strigani, and his whole thing was they really didn't like them, and a large part of what they were doing, again, this is so deeply hidden in the adventure, it would have been unlikely to come out no matter what, but they were trying to put all of the suspicion of spreading disease on the Strigani.
I think that was apparent.
But unknown to them, the Strigani were completely immune to the blankets that they were trying to plague them up with. So their plot was completely failed.
So I have a whole section of questions about the Strigani, but my assumption was that the Strigani were everybody's first impression of who was at fault.
Right.
And whether or not that was true or not was up to for us to decide, but I think that they were... I mean, there's obviously some racial tension there, but I think everybody was pointing their fingers at them. I got that throughout the event.
Yeah, but again, the idea, though, was that they kept thinking, hey, we're going to make all the Strigani sick with these blankets, and then it's going to just stand to reason that they did all this nasty stuff. So these guys are all essentially still working with the doctor as well. So the idea is, hey, let's get the Shalians out. We start making all this money, you know, it's like we're raking it in because we're taking all the coin from the townsfolk to give them their cures, so we're making money here, we're making money on the highway robbery, so they're all just kind of like this group of bad guys that are all working together.
So this group of thugs, which is I guess what we'll call them, separate from the cavalcade, were they part of the cavalcade? Were they where was the connection between the two?
That, just the doctor.
Just the doctor.
The doctor was.
So they were all in it separately to make money and be thugs,
right?
And the doctor was a subtle link between the two, and the Nurgle cavalcade had separate ambitions to do with the town from the thugs.
And the doctor was playing along with the whole let's plague up the Strigani camp with the blankets, and took it the next step based on the medicine he got from F, which was to start poisoning and essentially weakening all of the town's guards.
So something I missed is, was there a connection between the plague and the blight? Because we came here, the whole land was blighted.
Mm-hmm.
But then people were sick.
It's not implicit in the adventure in any point. It's the landscape is described as I presented it, where the whole area was already supposed to be blighted, mm-hmm. and it was intentionally left open for a further adventures in Hugeldahl sort of a mm-hmm. thing that, hey, you know,
the plague beast outside of town.
This could just be like that, you know, Father Nurgle has turned an eye towards this area and it's just corrupting.
Mine. The mine was never touched unless that was another section.
It was not touched.
The mine seems like a perfect place to have a source of the plague or the blight. Like, it's long since Cape had been abandoned and dried up.
Right.
I mean, that's begging to have somebody hiding in there doing stuff.
Okay, so, what about the mayor? Where so did the mayor fit?
The mayor was essentially...
Magnetha.
Yeah, this was one of those... Things went bad for her, and so she was already sort of susceptible to being influenced, and then with the medication being pumped into her to help cure her from
really aware of...
She was being puppeted by the doctor.
Well, okay. The medicine was made people more susceptible.
Made them susceptible, but she was ripe for it, which was exactly what the note from F had indicated, that, hey, once her husband dies... You know, she's going to be more susceptible to influence, and if you can cure her or, you know, save her, then, you know, she's going to favor you, and plus the medication is going to make her sort of woozy in the head anyway, so she was really sort of a victim in all this.
Oh, interesting. I had much darker things in mind of what she was up to.
And, you know, certainly she cast the Shalions out, but she wasn't implicitly involved with the bad guys.
Sure.
She was being
used. She was politically corrupt.
Yeah.
And being used.
I thought she was more of the instigator of that
too.
As opposed to a puppet.
No, that was definitely had its sort of, they kind of put that out there as a potential seed. But and it even stated in our epilogue that maybe you can use this down the road, that once word of what happened comes out, she gets essentially removed from power, but they just kind of hustle her and her mutant kid out into the forest to go live out her life in like a manor house or something.
Mm.
So, you know, but she's removed from power and they move somebody else in to take, you know, control of Hugeldahl. But they don't string her up or anything because they kind of acknowledge the fact that she got used.
So the guy, the survivor of the blight from the countryside that we encountered, I forget mm-hmm. where, what was the point of him other than to send us out? Was he just there so that we would have a reason to go out into the countryside?
To be perfectly honest, he, to me, seemed like the worst sort of intentional red herring. And I ran with
right.
it in the adventure, but... it seemed like it was really sort of there because, again, I took that basically verbatim out of the book. I read his little script right out, right, and just kind of acted it out a little bit. But I presented it as written, and so the idea is that he tells you all this stuff and sends you off. Potentially, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Is, well, if, you know, somebody hears the story, they're going to want to go out and check out the farmland.
Mm-hmm.
I totally thought that was the full plot line.
No, there's no map. There's no stat lines. There's no information at all on the adventure about what to do when the party goes, well, let's go check out the farm.
So you took off that whole section on your own.
I did that entirely ad hoc. I just ran with it.
I was surprised afterwards. We had no idea. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, wow, that was not part of it. With the standing stones and the battlefield and uh-huh. the dwarves. And the,
yeah, so. And again, I just took all of that from his tale, right? Because it talked about him pulling the stones down, so once I had that in my head, I just went, okay, you're out here. And I decided to go ahead and contribute to the overall blighted feel, and it fit in, and again, maybe it paved the road for an adventure down the road where the Beastman Shaman comes back, and
mm-hmm.
it's all just one big blight conspiracy, and Nurgle's just rotting the whole area of the countryside. But it wasn't intended to be an encounter, and again, I ran with it because it was in the story. I think the idea was more to sort of lay the groundwork again for the fact that the town has been weakened because the priest is dead.
I thought that was really well done, actually. That cemented in my mind that the town has been stripped of its defenses. All its fighting men have been left.
And I think that was the intent. It was just that it wasn't... It was sort of just left as, like, they're going to go out there. You know, I'm reading this going, there's no way the party's not going to go out to the farm, you know? So yeah. I had to sort of like put it out there and close that door. But it also, I think, drove home the point that, yeah, they're not coming back, yeah. You know?
You played it well. They were all dead.
Yeah.
And there was 40 beastmen out there.
Yeah.
You going to go get them?
No, we're good.
They're not like here right now, right? So we'll go back to town.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was afraid you guys were going to want to go chase after them.
And I'm glad
I wanted to, and then I counted the hoofprints. Divide by two. Yeah, no.
So that was that. And then there was the couple of other areas in town, the hospice, you know, where he was at, the abandoned Shalian temple, abandoned Sigmarite temple.
Was there much that we really missed there? I kind of felt like we were pretty thorough.
No, that was pretty covered. The Dwarven Quarter wasn't well detailed, but technically somewhere over there. It was supposed to be like in the early morning one day. That's where he would have found the bounty hunter out hawking his goblin ears. And I could have probably worked that in or forced it some way, but it just, there was always a lot going on with the doctor's office and things like that as you guys visited.
And I'm assuming the engineer was created for the purpose of Dave's amputated arm.
No, he's actually in the adventure.
Oh, is he really?
And
oh, cool.
He's another sort of almost like a distraction because he's pro Lady Agnetha's stance on like the physicians, but it also has a whole bit in there about he can be persuaded. And he's logically minded, and if you don't come in like just bad mouthing her and try and say, hey, but we think X, Y, and Z is going on, he could be persuaded, and was in fact intended. There was like five different people that could be present as allies in the combat at the end, and he was one of them. So he was available.
The
bounty hunter could be available. The farmer could be available. Not a great combatant, but he was like a townsfolk. You could use him as a townsfolk that would contribute.
Mm-hmm.
What else? There was like two others.
We ended up with the dwarves.
You had the dwarves, but I ad hoc'd that.
Yeah.
That
was the best part. That was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Did we miss anything in the doctor's office the first time we went in there? Because they didn't really go
what
in.
What about the receptionist?
The receptionist was just for flavor. Okay. She was part of the adventure, but you know, just kind of described briefly, and I just took it and ran with that. I think you got everything that you were supposed to get out of the office, including a disease. So,
success.
What about the well?
Oh, yeah.
The well was poisoned. That was like the first thing the doctor did when he got to town is took one of the flasks, unstoppered it, threw it in, and sort of started weakening the whole town and started to spread the ghoul pox, get everybody sick, and now they're drinking his medicine and they're kind of, you know, bleary-eyed or whatever. So he had originally contributed to the poisoning of the well by throwing one of those flasks in. Agnetha had one, and again, it's technically it is sort of medicine. It's just it's preventing you from getting the ghoul pox, but it's in turn making you tired and exhausted and mentally susceptible. So it and both the medicine and the original source of the pox both came from F. He provided both. It's like, here's the disease and here's the cure that you can go sell.
And to be clear, from the way the adventure is written, F is not, there's no clues as to who F is outside of that he's somebody from the north.
Some and horrible plague thing, some Nurgle.
They leave that open.
And he's obviously supposed to be a powerful one that's starting to manipulate things behind the scenes.
Okay. And so what was the point of the, what did you call it earlier? The up in
the Acropolis.
The Acropolis, yeah.
The Acropolis was there, I think, by looking at the prophecy up there, because I was trying to set that up, that prophecy had been created hundreds and hundreds of years ago, perhaps even longer. But it was describing the scene below exactly. And it was sort of a way that, you know, hey, if you go up there and explore and you find this, I think it sort of tried to explicitly state by talking about the fact that the well had been poisoned. You know, it started with the well, and it started with well water was one of the stances in the in the poem. It was trying to explain this, but it had been foreseen ages ago. And so the madman up there was literally just supposed to be kind of a, you know, fun little thing to mess with, but he's described as completely, you know, useless.
I guess maybe by that point I thought we kind of had it all put together.
Yeah.
And so I felt like the prophecy was, I don't, more confusing than anything else to me. Especially the whole, like, oh, it's been there forever part. So I was like, well.
So I took that as maybe this battle between Nurgle and this town has been kind of being waged several times throughout the years, where somebody has tried to retake this town multiple times and it's been fended off, and it just kind of is ongoing. And we may have stopped him this time, but 50 years from now, it might happen again.
And as you guys were interpreting it that way during the game session, I thought that was a pretty interesting interpretation. I think the book laid it out pretty clearly that this was supposed to be just like a portent of this particular event.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that when you started running with, you know, that interpretation, I was like, well, that's kind of neat too. You know, that maybe this is sort of a cycle or something, and now it's coming back again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think, and you know, again, not to call out my own fault there, but I did actually misspeak too. I don't think it had a big effect on the adventure, but Verena is actually the goddess of justice.
No, okay.
And in fact, Shalia is her daughter, so I had that part right.
But okay.
Tal was the god of nature.
Right.
So Verena was the goddess of justice.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to remember that somebody had commented on that.
And, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So anyway, so Verena, in fact, that was her daughter, and so she was sort of calling out, you know, my daughter's priests essentially were cast out, and this whole thing has now happened. And so again, that was again, I think, just a way that maybe if you'd missed several of the other clues, that it could have helped catch a party up by going up there. So it's like, hey, we missed something big. Oh, it's the well, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
So before we get to the finale discussion, which I think is probably one of the most interesting parts, I think there's two or three other spots we want to touch on. One was the Strigani camp, and the other one is the Garden of Mor. Aside from those two, is there anything else we want to be sure to touch on?
So pretty much the Temple of Sigmar was abandoned because they went out with the dwarf army, so that just reflected more of the defenseless nature of the town.
Right.
Spiritually, all the good gods had kind of abandoned, and so kind of that's all that was really there.
Right, right. And there was no priest of Mor in the adventure, so there was never one described. No, there was never even mentioned that one might be there. It only talked about attendants dealing with the bodies and keeping the garden, you know, the roses planted and all that kind of stuff. And the guard outside was part of the adventure. The uncle and the simpleton at the gate were part of the adventure. The guards.
So was there anything more with the Garden of Mor?
No, it was really, I think, set up to be. It was a very brief sort of mention that you didn't miss any clues. It was sort of just there to have one guard that's sort of an anchor point, like somebody you could trust and somebody that was sort of naturally resilient to the disease, so he wasn't taking the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of was just maybe had a little bit of a sniffle of a cold or something, but otherwise was resisting all of the other stuff around. So it gave you kind of a one good guy in town that maybe you could glom onto and work with. The garden was described as being in, you know, immaculate condition, I think, you know, just by interpretation, just to sort of say business is good. There's plenty of death going on here and the garden's doing great. So yeah, that was about it for that.
So the Strigani, which Layla, you kind of attached.
I was hoping to get a little more out of that whole scenario, but
well, unfortunately, that was entirely me. So other than the fact that the camp was present and the fact that they talked about the gypsies sort of being used as a scapegoat potentially for the disease, and the fact that everybody kind of poo-poos them, and that they had the agitator out there, you know, talking smack, they didn't give me anything to go on. It was
okay.
Just there's a camp. It wasn't described other than, you know, there's a few colorful wagons out there, blah blah blah.
Like, I kept wondering, why are they there? Why do they stay?
Okay,
why don't they care? If
they were a big force, apparently like neutral and untouchable in some way, and then they refused. They were Switzerland. They refused.
Yeah, they totally.
Now as to why they were there, I'd have to go back and listen. I think I tried to lay the groundwork for that at the very first session.
I was okay with why they were there. That was because the people who are down the luck like playing games and like spending
gambling
their money.
And whores and all that kind of stuff. So they're going to spend their money on that because the town's down and out. So they're essentially there to sort of
milk them dry.
Right. So they're there to take advantage of it. And when the money runs out for this month, they pick up their wagons and they roll onto some other town for a few weeks and do it there. But this just sort of became like a place where they always come because, hey, everybody's mopey and the mines are dried up and they're getting liquored up and doing all these bad vice-like things and we're making money on it.
So was there any explanation on the Strigani in general? Because I think this was my first experience with them as a culture in Warhammer, and I didn't really know much about them outside of their parallel to being gypsies. So what did we have to go on? Are they immune to disease on purpose? Is it just because?
It was mentioned in... It was a very small sidebar in the adventure that just kind of talked about the Strigoi in general and made mention of the fact that they were resistant to the diseases that are currently in this adventure. So that they were sort of not being susceptible to all this stuff for whatever reason, whether it was little hexes or whatever they were doing, mm-hmm. but they were sort of being unaffected by it, which was causing suspicion.
To add the suspicion, okay.
Right. Now, my background on them is, you know, I knew a lot about them from sort of them being linked into Sylvania and the war game background and things like that, just having been around Warhammer forever, so I just took what background knowledge I had and ran with it. But there was really nothing to feed me other than a sidebar and sort of a description of, hey, they're out there.
So why don't you think they helped us?
Specifically, you guys had that was essentially their opinion was, after all that's been happening in the town, let it burn. And we'll just pack up our wagons and move. So
they could have helped us burn it.
They could have. They were more interested in protecting themselves. So I had them throw up, you know, the old woman threw up like a protective spell kind of thing to help keep the bad guys away from them. And I think that if things had started to go particularly bad for you, that maybe they would have helped. But the only people that were dying were the dwarves, and they were kind of like, eh. Hmm. So yeah, I had them there as a, sort of a GM fiat that if I needed to save somebody's bacon and felt like maybe things were going way too bad, I could have called in some of the gypsies. I probably wouldn't have done that until we'd had, like, you know, one casualty and one knockout or something. But,
I mean, if David lost another limb.
Somebody loses an arm, you know.
Or a leg.
I'd have let you die. I'm a jerk that
Dave,
way.
Dave, to be perfectly honest, you should have died.
I know.
I mean, you really should have. There's no reason you should have survived that.
It's great character building.
It is.
That's an awesome introduction to your career.
It's building a legend.
Yeah.
And so speaking of
and
careers,
good dice rolling.
I have to give some credit to the three of us. Might have sort of helped you there. I'm not sure.
No, he has consistently the best dice rolls of any of us. That's why he keeps living.
I stay up late at night because it's just the dice.
You summon the luck.
So speaking of, you just mentioned your career, Dave. Let's do a quick summary of where he's been, like what careers has he been, and where are you headed? Because right now, I think I heard you say you're at about 18 experience, so you're on your way towards your third career.
Yeah. So I started out just as your basic run of the mill soldier, and then worked my way to Ironbreaker. And actually, to be honest with you, I hadn't really thought to the next level.
It's my understanding. You're in Ironbreaker right now.
Yes.
We may have made a mistake at some point because Ironbreaker, I believe, is a third tier profession. So maybe we should even. And you don't have your Grommel armor yet.
No.
So we might. It might be fun to actually keep you in another Ironbreaker career and actually properly work into it.
Sure.
Because we're thinking of our next adventure maybe being the dwarf one from the Harrower of Thanes, which is in the dwarf supplement. So sure. That might be a fun place to.
And then work towards my Grommel.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe try and work that into that story somewhere.
Sure.
Cool, okay. So I think the finale is probably the biggest derailment of the adventure. Is that safe to
say? Yeah, and again, I think that there was. It was a anticipated fork in the adventure. You know, it's sort of a what if the party walks up with torches and confronts the wagon?
So that obviously we did that. We know how that played out. That was really
fun. What about the confrontations, though, that we had when we were attacked at the hotel in our room?
That went as planned. It was
just
later.
2 nights later, yeah.
Later, but that was supposed to happen. The difficult observation check that Jesse made was supposed to be the, you know, save you from getting completely beaten to death in your sleep. So that actually
really well.
That made that fight even more difficult because you guys lost all of your ability to soak for that entire first round of combat. So you took a lot more wounds than you would have. And again, that was in the adventure. That was sort of the penalty for, like, if the ambush is successful, this is the penalty. They don't get any soak.
I'm going to admit at this point that even though I made that observation check, me as a person had no idea that we were going to be ambushed.
What?
I knew.
That
was the pre-roll.
Make sure you stay awake.
I thought you guys were all being paranoid. And I just said, yeah, I was like, I'll placate you guys for now and then I'm going to bed.
I mean,
yeah.
Have you ever seen a horror movie where the horror is during the day? No, it's at night.
It's
when it's dark.
At night.
You know, it makes perfect sense in retrospect. I just was not in that frame of mind at all.
Well, and here's the thing. I had you guys pre-roll that that particular observation check at the beginning of the session, so you wouldn't know when I was cashing it in. And Dave had succeeded with like one success, but you succeeded with several, so I decided I was only going to call out one person. So it's not that you didn't succeed. Right. I just decided whoever had the most, I'm going to put the onus on them to do something about it, and there we go.
Awesome. Oh, the hotel's doing maintenance so well these days.
This is what I expected.
The hotel with the diseased blankets downstairs?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
We didn't know about the diseased blankets, too. But,
So the ambush went as intended, with the exception that there were three additional bad guys in there to really tip things against you. So that worked out in terms of like creating even more.
So I have a question then on that. As written, the cavalcade is to come the next morning. Mm-hmm. If we get ambushed that night, what are we supposed to do after we get ambushed?
That's what I'm saying. That's why I thought...
Like, if I get ambushed by people in town that I'm recognizing, it's not like I'm going to go back to sleep and everything's cool.
Yeah, that was really rough. That was, you know, to have a combat and then another combat, two big combats the same day.
That was one problem I saw with the way it was written, and again, I decided to roll with it. I think maybe that there might have been a sense that, okay, now you're already beaten up and now you have to deal with something to put some sort of, you know, threat and mm-hmm. ominous sort of feel to the whole thing.
Well, actually, I really liked going into that, like from a angst perspective, I really liked going into that battle. That was legitimately stress-inducing for all of us already near death to begin a confrontation that was going to be very big.
Yeah.
I think we all legitimately felt very nervous.
Players and characters. We kind of scoured the town for any allies we had.
Which was a lot of
fun.
But
the motivation was set up perfectly because, you know, we're just obviously alerted to something really bad happening by that ambush. And so here's the motivation to move forward and, like, strike on this cavalcade.
Yeah, and I think it all played out very naturally. And I think it went really well. And again, I agree that there was a nice natural tension there because of the fact that you were already beat up. I think that if had the other three... effectively soldiers not been present in the ambush, you wouldn't have been as badly beaten. So there still may have been some wounds. You know, you got hit with a nasty strike that did a ton of wounds all in one fell blow kind of thing. So again, I think if I'd had to spread the combatants that were available, if there had only been five or whatever instead of eight, and you know, if I had to spread them out amongst the two groups, it wouldn't have gone nearly as dangerously for you guys.
I like the way it played out, though, because we were beat up, and I don't think I've ever played a character in any game that was part of the Pitchforks and Torches team. Right?
Actually a lot of fun.
We were the mob, and it played out exactly like the mob scenes do, as the monster comes out and we go, drop the pitchfork and torch and want to run away, right?
When that happened, I seriously was like, we're getting out of this alive? That's not possible.
Like there's a sorcerer and like a, you know, plague bear, and then there's still a beast in the other wagon.
Well, Helga and Conrad at that point were talking to each other because the dwarves were off fighting and we're doing some range combat on the other side, and Helga and Conrad are talking like, okay, so at what point do you and I turn tail and head down the road? Because we were ready to do it. We were one or two turns away from doing it.
Yeah.
Because we were not ready to die, and something we would love to save one of you, but I don't think it was going to happen.
Yeah,
and you know the way that the ambush had played out, and then leading right into that also had a little bit of a derailment. Not bad, but essentially that doctor's little jar of vapors was supposed to be used if you had confronted him and tried to attack him in his office or home.
He did like the ninja escape.
He was supposed to throw that down, plug you up with his foul vapors that he also got from F, as like, hey, if you get in trouble, use this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then jump out the window and go hide with your friends until the cavalcade shows up. You know, kind of
thing.
We
thwarted that.
Yeah, that was excellent. So let's fast forward and go. We know how it played out for our adventure, but I'm really curious to know what the written version of that was during the next day, because I'm curious how all that encounter of all those people and the performance and all that was kind of supposed to play out.
So the cavalcade was essentially going to run like this. In the morning, the wagons arrive and begin setting up the same way I described it, right? They're building the stage, they're setting up the poles. So sort of all of the minion henchmen, the jugglers, the acrobats, and the two strong men and women were going to be sort of building the stage and setting the wagons up. And then about noon... that day, the jugglers and stuff were going to put on their costumes with all their big floppy hats, and they were going to do like a little parade through the town, trying to like spread flyers like, hey, come to the show this evening, you know, that kind of thing, playing music. The whole time that people were like kind of coming out to maybe check out the fair or whatever it is that they've set up, there was going to be music coming from the wagons, which was being played by the Nurglings. So they're all inside with the horns and the tambourines and the drums.
So twisted.
So you don't see them, you just hear the music coming from out of, you know, out of the wagon. But that was
you
all
picture these little green blobs and they're like,
so can you imagine them using that instrument afterwards, right?
So that's what they were doing. Now, so during this little parade thing though, they were supposed to all kind of go bouncing through the town and kind of, you know, tumbling and getting the attention of the children henchmen. And the people. Yeah, so they're all kind of doing all this to sort of...
Because everybody else is just human. They're cultists. They may as well look human.
So the plague bearer and the sorcerers and the Nurglings are still hidden.
So the plague bearer itself is actually an extremely intelligent plague bearer. It's not like a combat monster. It's more of like a manipulator. And it was actually keeping ledgers, which you guys burned up and never got to find, but it was keeping ledgers of... like, are we causing enough illnesses and sort of reporting back? So he was essentially the accountant. And it's like, have we spread enough disease?
That is
this
so
week?
Creepy.
I love that.
That is awesome.
So he was in the main wagon in the back with like a curtain drawn. So if anybody just looked in, they wouldn't have seen him. But he was in the back with his big floppy hat and keeping his books. And, you know, and the thing was,
the accountant of
there's
death.
Actually, there's actually a schism between the bad guys, too. So that the Chaos Sorcerer sort of has his thing that he wants to do, but if it starts to go bad, there's sort of a, well, if this isn't working, the Plague Bearer basically just comes busting out and starts like attacking people to spread disease that way. He's like, well, fine, you know, if we're not going to get to poison the town, then I'm going to kill everybody. So that ended up sort of playing out.
Uh-huh.
But he was also, both the Plague Bearer and the Sorcerer were sort of scripted to like save their own butts if possible. So that's why they both fled. It was like, okay, the minions are all dead.
Yeah, if they can't cause... finish here, we're going to cause plagues.
And that was the thing. It's like they were more interested in surviving to plague later than to fight you guys to the death. You know, so that was definitely sort of built in, you know, maybe save you guys, but also part of the story. So
what you had mentioned earlier that there were sections of this advertising for the upcoming show that were meant to drop seeds for us to gain suspicion of what was going on.
Well, so there were events that were part of this. So as they make their first round, they're just sort of dropping off flyers. They go back to the wagons and they take the big mutant gorilla guy and wrap him up in all kinds of stuff to make him look like almost like a float or something like that, right?
Oh,
so they put a big costume on him and make him look like he's some kind of toy, and they would go back parading through town. And then the idea was that they were going to end up back at the Shalian Temple.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to take the mutant down into the Shalian Temple, stick him, and they had like these cells underneath, and there was nothing in there for you guys to find, but the plan was they were going to put him in one of these cells, and they were going to like take the mangled corpses of a couple of the other people that, you know, they had like stuffed in one of the wagons or whatever, and they were going to maybe kill some of the people in the town and scatter their limbs and stuff all around down there to make it look like the Shalians were... The idea was that they wanted the Shalians to be convicted of trying to, like, save this mutant, but it instead had gotten loose and killed everybody. So they were going to try and besmirch the Shalians by placing this horrid thing in the cell and then letting it look like it killed everybody. And the intent by the Chaos Sorcerer was also to... They were supposed to meet the doctor there, and he was going to go down there and help them, and they were going to whack the doctor and chop him up too and leave him down there. So there would be no link back. And so the doctor would be one of the people that got chopped up. Now he's gone. There's nobody to trace back, and they just leave the town with this mutant down there. In the meantime, the skinny jongler chick with the sword that fought with you guys.
That's the one who's fighting Helga. Yeah,
she was supposed to go walking by the well and drop a whole new nasty plague package into the well that was really going to kill everybody.
The one that kept, like, dancing around me?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So she was supposed to deliver a package and sort of separate from the well at some point. So if you guys had been maybe watching, you would have seen her kind of, la, 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 you know, and drop the thing into the well. But that one was, like, you know, 10 times worse than what the doctor had put in. It would have killed the town. It would have been like, hey, if you drink this water now, you, like, get boils and pox and fall over dead kind of thing.
And just as a quick tangent here, you had mentioned a cavern system under the well. Was that just kind of
I just winged that because I wanted the guy to get... I want the doctor to get away so maybe he can hook up back again with the sorcerer, so we can come back to that.
Interesting.
Okay, so what happened after?
So, yeah, so that was supposed to be, you know, they get the guy down there, they drop the packet into the well, they go back, everybody comes out for the performance, and during the performance they were essentially going to be like spreading like plague vapors among all the people to really make sure everybody got it one way or the other. So they were going to be kind of like fanning out this plague nastiness. And again, it sort of presented opportunities though where they were separating and moving around differently. And so maybe, hey, if the doctor hasn't been picked off yet, maybe you can catch him in the Shalian temple and take care of him. And if any of the people in the ambush survived and escaped, they were going to be hiding there. So maybe you could have found them and whacked them and then maybe ambushed the group of
So does the adventure take the assumption that once everybody's separated doing their thing, you've already have suspicions and are trying to shut it down?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so maybe, like I said, so the party's maybe like, hey, the doctor got away with his cloud of vapor. Now we got to go find him. Oh, these cavalcade people are heading for the temple. Maybe let's go figure out what's going on. Because the assumption, I think, is that you found the letter in the doctor's office. And so now you know that he's linked to the cavalcade. So the activities of the cavalcade might lead you from point to point to point.
Okay.
So if you'd sort of maybe like waited for the things to develop, you could have maybe followed them and maybe isolated them. The mutant thing wouldn't have been in the wagon. It would have been locked up in the cell under the Shalian temple, so you wouldn't have had to deal with it. So there was sort of that kind of stuff. The strong men played out the way they were supposed to. They were supposed to be sort of the heavies of the minions to kind of come out and lay some waste. You know, they had no armor on.
But we were meant to fight them.
You were meant to fight them.
So as the stage performance begins, what is the performance or what was the...
I don't remember the name of the play. They mentioned it in the adventure. Oh, okay. It named some play and it says that they hastily and badly perform it. And it's like a really big letdown for everybody in town. You know, the music continues to pour from the wagons, but they do the play, but they just do it like really fast and they're kind of running off stage and changing costumes and they just kind of hastily do it. Then when they're all done and they've kind of let this like incense stuff waft over the crowd, they pack up their stuff and move on.
Oh, so they actually are meant to
they're pack up and off leave to the next town to fulfill the quota for...
So if you let it all go, they'll leave.
Yeah, they leave and everybody in the town eventually dies from sickness and they move on to some other poor town and perform their show there.
So the other assumption then is that we intervene. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Right.
Oh, no, I was going to ask, like, usually in the adventures I've played so far at the end, like, the town usually thanks us for doing whatever it is that we did. We didn't really get a thanks this time. We just kind of booked out. Like, does the town even know that we saved it?
I think that with that last little bit in the epilogue that we did, talking to the guard in front of the Garden of Moor, mm-hmm. he's sort of, again, I think that was supposed to be the good guy in town. He's the anchor. He's the trusted old sentinel that can maybe tell everybody what really happened here. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
I think we only marginally succeeded.
Yeah, I'd say that that's fair. But you also, I mean, I would say on a grand scheme, you had a great success. You wiped out this cavalcade that would have potentially killed hundreds and hundreds of more people and spread plague all over the place. So you wiped it out. So in sort of the big picture, you did a great job. But you're not going to get the credit for it, which is very Warhammer.
Before hearing all the different plots and threads and potential consequence of letting this thing go on, before that, I thought we failed. But now, I think we succeeded. Pretty good.
I feel we've stopped the immediate threat, but all the pieces to rebuild it are still in
the play. Sorcerer and the Plague Bearer.
And to that, I see that's just potentially new. You know, that's Nemesis, you know? So it's like now that Chaos Sorcerer, who really wasn't all that powerful, maybe as Conrad continues to grow in power and knows that this thing is still out there, he can come back as a Nemesis more powerful than he was before.
Backed up by the deadly Nurgle Accountant.
Yes.
Well, plus these things never go away, like, you know,
diseases hang around.
I get the feeling that even had we succeeded in killing off one of the main bad guys, like, there still would have been some proliferation of awfulness.
Sure. So. And again, it's one of those things, it's Warhammer, so we can just abandon this thread and let it go and run its course. Or these things can become Nemesis characters for us to go chase down and try and hunt up down, figure out where they went and what are they doing. And then maybe eventually as we start progressing through our careers, we can go figure out what F is, and that's so wide open, we can really have that be anything. That could be a great unclean one
somewhere. I mean, I think it's apparent to me that it's Karl Franz.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the emperor of the... he did not like Heimdall. He had some ex-lover there who he needed to get rid of.
Stupid
tax reform.
Baerdin, Baerdin started out as a hunter when we first encountered him back in our first adventure. Uh-huh. What's he been up to and where's he headed?
Well, his first career was a watchman, and he completed that career, and he has now picked up a knack for engineering. So he hopes to make it back to Carrick Asgaraz and kind of do some studying there.
Okay. And, so hence kind of some of the seeds you dropped at the end there, where you're kind of tinkering with Thorin or Dave's prosthetic arm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
And he'd communicated that to me a couple weeks back ago, so I already knew he was headed that way. That's why I kind of left that thread open so that he'd have something to mess with. So, okay, a project.
Excellent. And Helga also has had an interesting career. Where has she been, and where do we have any idea where she's headed?
I mean, she started out just as a regular old human, and now technically I'm a charlatan, although admittedly I haven't really been able to do much with it, nor do I really know what to do with it, so I'm just going to let myself transition. Helga has now seen that she's seen Conrad do magic a couple of times, right? And has seen the advantages of the little like magic darts and little scythe and basically not having to be anywhere near.
And the witch and the magic that came along with the Witch's Song adventure. Mm. You kind of saw a lot of it then too.
Right, but so she's kind of been exposed to it, and she also likes that, you know, knowing spells means she doesn't have to get close to her opponents in any way, and therefore her self-preservation is kicking in. I think I'm going to foray into the mage career with her and have her just start dabbling in all sorts of weird little things.
So does that kind of bring some interesting ideas to play? And I know you haven't fully thought it through yet, but for the benefit of the listeners, I want to talk a bit about it. So dabbling into magic can be a couple different avenues, and there's the studying under a college, which means you have to be like accepted into that college or born or bought into it.
Yeah.
Or there's this kind of like hedge magic or kind of like rogue magic style that you can approach.
Yeah, Helga's obviously nonconformist, so she's not going to try to get admitted into a university. Well,
the third option seems to, you know, you found this grimoire of all these
which
nasty
you've had for
images
ages and had no idea what to do with it.
Right.
Yeah, so she's gonna, I mean, she's going to stick with Conrad, presumably, and basically start nagging him to, like, help her with her magic or whatever, and in the meanwhile, whatever she picks up along the way, she'll just kind of.
So it sounds to me like a hedge wizard is kind of where she's headed.
Mm-hmm. It does, and it also to me presents immediate and interesting party conflict.
Yes,
because exactly. Conrad's not going to be sort of strung
out.
I
was going to get into that in a second when I do my summary.
I mean, she's already been pretty pesky with Conrad, so I just feel like it's a natural progression.
But I think the fun thing is, because Helga's future plot lines then opens up, she's dabbling in magic, which she's not allowed to do,
mm-hmm.
which means every time she demonstrates it, she needs to be careful. She's basically becoming an apostate or, you know, rogue wizard, and so she's going to have more power than she's allowed to present,
mm-hmm.
which could be a lot of fun.
And traveling around with a mutant goat.
Furthermore, she now has a mutant goat, which somehow she's going to have to try to save. So
that's going
to
be really interesting. I'm thrilled for that. Okay, so that'll be a lot of fun. And you're still illiterate, I believe.
I am still illiterate.
But you should have plenty of advances to buy literacy,
mm-hmm.
When we do your career transition. So Conrad, this was his first adventure, but I fast-forwarded him slightly to be a bit below the main characters, but give him something to start with. He's still an apprentice wizard of the Amethyst Order, and I really liked where Helga was going with wanting to experiment with magic, so he's probably considering doing kind of a unsanctioned tutor scenario. And he'll try and probably hide that as long as possible, I think, is where he's headed. So, you know, that kind of gives you maybe some benefits or reasons and ability to transition into hedge wizard.
Mm-hmm.
Gives me a reason to become a rogue wizard or have some secrets, which I think are... Having secrets or faults, I think, are always a lot of fun as a player.
Helga's also going to get you a tan.
You know. I mean, once we both cure our diseases, we can talk about this.
And I knew that you guys had already mentioned to me that was a potential path a few sessions ago, so that was also why I wanted particularly to have these sort of hedge wizard Strigani in the camp, is to sort of give you another maybe avenue that maybe she doesn't need to have literacy, maybe she learns magic through herbs and potions and things like that. And then as that starts to transition or manifest, maybe you start finding you've got more latent power that you can draw on without having to do all the grimoire study, which makes it even, you know, more sketchy. And
well, what'll be really interesting is what kind of magic she decides to start going after, because she has the grimoire, which is presumably either a chaotic magic or dark magic, which are spells you're certainly not allowed to know. But those are the ones you have access to. Or you start going down the hedge magic stuff, which is a little more witchcrafty.
And I mean, I think,
and I was looking at the witch there, the sort of the Strigani woman is sort of being an amber,
right,
unsanctioned, so she's sort of doing the wild magic and that kind of thing.
Anyway. I think that's exactly what I had in mind, too. Something something unruly, something kind of...
Because you're from Kislev, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Helga found a lot of, I don't know, comfort or just, you know, interest in the Strigani camp, and probably that's why she took the headband, because she was like, well, I want something to, like, make me feel like I'm part of them.
You know, amber magic might be a lot of fun, because that has the shape-shifting stuff into animals as well.
That could be, and I have animal handling, I wonder.
And it ties in well with the gypsy lore, and so maybe you start becoming a little bit of a, you know, adopted child of the various gypsy factions.
Because I've got no family.
Conrad's becoming an enabler here.
But, you know, maybe that leads us to some exciting, you know, Sylvanian vampire adventure or something.
Interesting.
Well, let's, so we've all finished Horror at Hugeldal. This was considered a tier 2 adventure. So this was meant for anybody between 10 and 20 experience points. So I think we all kind of fit into that, that ranking, more or less. We have 4 players do it. Let's do a quick roundtable recap and summary of, you know, what we think. You want to start with Bearden?
I thought it was great, actually. You know, again, I kind of get to advance Bearden's anti-chaos personality, you know, fighting in the swamp against the beasts that were there, and the, you know, dark forces, the dark elves. So he is kind of trying to shape himself up to be a...
I see you as one of, like, the best tacticians we have.
You have a plan.
He goes into battle, he knows what he's doing, and it happens.
He's deliberate about it,
Sometimes it feels that way. So, you know, trying the stout dwarf and trying to be brave, although I think I've failed every fear and terror check I've made.
Well, you just keep catching these weird mind diseases, you're, like, in and out of consciousness,
It was all blur back there. So I like that kind of character advancement and what the adventure did for him, and I enjoyed it, and you know, get to play with some of the dwarves and everything. So
cool. What, Dave, how'd you what'd you think?
I liked it. It was I don't know if it was my favorite one. It definitely had a lot of puzzle solving. This one was more reasoning and deduction of what's going on in more story form than, and not as much combat or confrontation, which is the part I like. But considering how much damage poor Thorin has taken, he's probably not going to be wanting to be in the front ranks on the next round.
You stood in front of a beast.
Probably that was your choice, standing behind the archer. Yeah, marching in behind Bearden is probably going to be his next move. Probably ducking down behind him, you know. And,
the conversations that these two dwarves have over a beer, though, is that you keep getting beat up over that cursed dwarven
gold. See, that's
dwarven
the whole problem. It's the darn ale, because then it just works me up and I just get into battle. And it's just, so my dice rolling is the only thing that's saving me.
Seriously.
Helga, Layla.
I enjoyed it. There were elements of it that I suppose I felt like there were too many red herrings. Like, there were just certain elements that when we were faced with them, I just wasn't sure what part of the story they fit into. And so, I don't know. I was hoping they would get resolved a little bit more, like, closely knit in the storyline, but it turns out they were just red herrings. Overall, though, yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
So what did you think?
We're over to me. Well, I thought it went really well, all things considered. I think that the progress of the whole adventure went well. I think it went not always predictably, but I think it went in good directions. And I really liked the way that the end played out with the ambush leading directly to a high tension confrontation, mob style, with all the bad guys. You know, wasn't necessarily the ideal, like, get to see all the cool stuff that they wrote out for the adventure stuff, but I think that for our group and the way that it worked out naturally, I think it was really fun.
Well, I think you did a really great job ad-libbing where you did.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot there. It added a lot of flavor, and it was really great.
And your characterization of all the, like, little characters, like the Strigani woman and the dude up in the, what do you call it?
Oh, at the Acropolis?
Yeah, the Acropolis. I mean, yeah, that stuff was awesome.
Yeah, it was hard to tell what was in the venture and what wasn't. Well,
that's good.
Yeah, great job there. Yeah. I think, because given it was the Nurgle adventure, which is arguably most people's favorite Chaos God, I think this adventure kind of had a high profile or a pretty heavy spotlight on it to be like, you know, what will everybody do with it? Will they enjoy it? And I really wish, in retrospect, we had experienced the play, but I was still, on the other hand, very satisfied with the way we handled it. I was really glad we did this talk too, so we could kind of like experience it secondhand at least.
Oh, it was good to be revelatory because I hate when I'm the only one that knows the adventure.
Well, I think we should do this more when we finish adventure because I kind of wish we'd done this on some of the other ones now. I think this was really helpful. I don't know how many people actually listen to it, given how many spoilers it has, but I think most people probably will anyway. Because, I mean, everybody's game will be drastically different from the last.
Sure.
That's true.
Well, with that, let's wrap it up. You guys, thanks for playing. Chris, thanks for GMing.
Yeah,
you did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to our next adventure.
All right.